You are listening to the Grow Law Firm podcast, where each guest shares actionable, practical ideas with you on how to get more clients, expand your reach, and grow your law firm's revenue and profit. Here's your host, Sasha Burson.
Hi there. I have a small but really meaningful favor to ask you. You know, I watch At The Stats on our YouTube channel and Spotify channel, wherever most people listen and watch our podcast. And I see that over 80% of everybody who listens to it regularly is not a subscriber. I'm asking you to subscribe to this channel. And the reason for that is my mission and the mission of my team is to help as many small law firm owners to learn how to transform their law firms into better businesses, and so they in turn enjoy better lives. When you hit subscribe button, you tell these platforms that this is content worth listening, worth viewing, and they in turn will show it to many other small law firm owners and hopefully help me fulfill our mission of helping them create a better business and enjoy better lives. So would you please do me this favor? It would mean the world to me. And hit the subscribe button. And my promise to you is that I will continue to work hard at creating good content with practical ideas that help you and your teams grow better law firms. Thank you. Welcome to another great episode of Grow Law Firm Podcast. I have an amazing guest with me here today. I've heard his name countless times. I read about his association countless times. A few months ago, I came across an older article that Ken Hardinson authored about how he made his first $1 million back in the 90s as a personal injury law firm owner. You built, I believe, two law firms that you sold off roughly 2010, something like that. So it's been a while. And the last 15 years or so, you dedicated to helping small law firm owners, what I like to call build a better business so they can enjoy better lives.
Absolutely. I made all the mistakes you could make, so I got a lot of advice of do what I didn't. Half of what I did do, don't do. Yeah, I could have did it a lot easier, but you learn by your mistakes.
I'm no scholar on the Bible, but I believe half of the Bible tells you what to do and half of the Bible tells you what not to do.
Absolutely.
It's equally important to know both.
It is. It is.
Tell us about your journey.
Well, I was, I grew up very, very poor. My mother had an eighth grade education. My father had a fourth grade education. And I started working in tobacco fields when I was about 10, 11 years old. Up till I was about 14 or 15, and then they had some kind of chemicals they were putting on the tobacco that I couldn't handle it. I was throwing up. So I went and got a job at a local grocery store, bagging groceries, did that. Then my freshman year, they had a old country butcher shop in the back of the store. And I started cutting meat. And I did that on weekends and after school and things like that. And then got out, went to college, still worked there. Kind of worked my way through college, worked my way through law school. Actually got married between my sophomore and junior year. Had two kids in law school, believe it or not. I worked jobs, still working while I was going to law school. Got out, got a job, went to this firm down, and it was in North Carolina. I'm from North Carolina, in the eastern part of the state. And I had clerked for him one summer. Had a great PI firm, and but he was a workaholic, and I'd always been accused of being one, but to be honest with you, that's the only guy I could never satisfy. We worked 6.5 days a week. We worked Saturdays and Sunday afternoons and other Monday through Friday, and I had a ball game. I was a big UNC fan, and this was about 1982. It was Clemson playing North Carolina, and both of them were ranked in the top 10 in the nation in football. And one of my buddies from law school called me and said, I got some tickets to the game. He said, I want you and your bride to come up and watch it with me and my bride. And so I walked in like on a Tuesday and told my boss, I said, I got a chance, these tickets, I want to go. I want to take off Saturday. which would be crazy today, right? In today's deal, somebody would even be working on Saturdays. But, and he said, well, I don't think so. I said, well, we don't have any trials next week. And he said, yeah, but we just got a lot to do. And I thought about it, and I walked back to my office, and I said, you know what? I'm going to that ball game. So I walked back in. I hadn't even talked to my wife or anything. I'll give him my resignation. I said, and I am going to the ball game. I said, I'll work out whatever you want me to, or I can leave right now. I said, it's up to you. I said, but I will be taking Saturday off. And he started backpedaling, and he tried to talk me out of it. And, of course, he gave me off Saturday. But I stayed with him about 6 weeks. He found somebody else. And I went back to my hometown. I had about $2,500 cash. And rented an office space and set up shop in a little town of about 10,000 people. And it's called Dunn, North Carolina. It's exit 72 on I-95 running through North Carolina. And, you know, I started that law office the first year I did. I did maybe 38,000 gross, probably netted about 18.
So 1983.
Yeah, 1983, yeah. And, and the job I had left, they were paying me $30,000. So, you know, it was a big cut in pay. But I went around to every lawyer in town and said, I'll take any case you don't want. I'll do research for you. I'll cover motions for you. I'll do anything. And I went to every law firm in the county, really. I just made it a deal to go visit with them. And I'd ask them for advice. You know, lawyers love to tell you, you know, how smart they are. So I just, you know, played off their egos, and I got enough of work, got some shitty cases, you know, and worked them hard and made some money. And then I was one firm across the street had been in that town since 1932. There's three generations of a family, and the grandfather was there and the son was there, or the father and son, not the grandfather. He had died. And they were all Wake Forest graduates. And they mostly did some PI defense work, and they did a lot of real estate and state work, a little bit of family law. It was in a small town. And they kept associating me on cases because the older man, he was in his 80s. He didn't want to go to court no more. He didn't need to be going to court no more. So after about a year of that, too, they offered me a partnership, you know, third partnership. Man, I didn't have to buy in or anything, just give it to me. I think they liked my work ethic because I was a worker. I took the law firm and I just started doing a lot of grassroots marketing. No TV, nothing like that. And I did PI, criminal, small time criminal, you know, misdemeanor criminal, DWIs. I did Social Security hearings, and I was the only one in the county doing them, so everybody referred me to Social Security cases. I did a little bit of workers' comp, and I did a little bit of family business law. And then that my partner, he handled real estate and estate planning, you know. And so we grew to, I think I helped grow it, bragging, but anyway, I took the firm. Back then, it was doing about $150,000 a year in income. And when I've got it up where it was doing, I don't know, probably $750,000. And this is like 92, 93. But all we were running was a Yellow Page, and I was doing some cross-selling of our services when we'd get rid of somebody. You know, somebody close the file, I'd send them a letter, say, we also do this, you know, if you need us, I want you to think of us as your trusted legal advisor. Anything you need, if we can't do it, we'll find somebody that can. And so it started growing and got up to about $1 million. And then all of a sudden, like 95, 94, started plateauing. And I said, wait a minute, I've been practicing 13 years. I'm getting better results. I'm smarter. It should be growing. You know what? And I hadn't stopped what I was doing. So in 95, I go to court on a DWI case, and then here walked Joe on crutches. And I said, Joe, I said, what happened? He said, I got T-boned by a semi. thinking, my God, great case. And he said, I said, well, you know, I do that. He said, yeah, but I saw this guy on TV and I figured he must really be good if he's on TV. So I tried his case. I won it. I went back to the office. I sat down with my two partners. Then we had another one, another young lawyer from Duke that did domestic because I hated domestic. I wouldn't do it. And I said, we've got to change with the times. I said, we got to start marketing. And they said, no, it's not professional. We don't have to do it. And we had that conversation for off and on for about 6 months. And then finally one day I just said, you know, guys, it's time for me to go. And so I took one associate. We had an associate too. I took one associate and three staff. We worked out a deal on the cases. I just give them whatever they wanted. I didn't really care. I just wanted to get out and get going. And then I started going to all these marketing things that had nothing to do with law firms. I studied Dan Kennedy a lot. I studied J. Abraham. I read the Think and Grow Rich. I've always been a voracious reader. I like reading. The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. I read all that stuff. And so I went out and I had accumulated a little bit of wealth, not a lot. So I went to the bank. And of course, back then they wouldn't loan you money on your practice because they couldn't foreclose on it. Right? So I got all my real estate that I had, everything I owned, and I put it up for collateral and borrowed $500,000. I also went down and visited with John Morgan. Back then he had about 25 lawyers. And I said, can I shadow you for like 3 days? I just want to pick your brain. And he said, sure. And so that was invaluable. Then I went up to another lawyer up in Indiana, Ken Nunn, and he was like the king of direct mail and stuff. And I stayed a day or two with him too. So I would go to these firms outside that was not that competing.
Ken Allen, you said?
Ken Nunn, N-U-N-N. He's in Indiana. Ken. Yeah, Nunn. Yeah. And I got a lot of good advice from those guys. And so I went out. I hired an ad agency, went out, cut commercials. I remember I flew out to California. It took me 8 hours to cut 3 commercials. I just didn't know what I was doing. I just screwed it up. And so anyway, which is funny because the last commercial I ever cut back in 2009, we cut 18 commercials in 3 hours. So that tells you the more you do something, the better you get at it, right? You know, so I thought about that. I said, 8 hours to do 3 hours to do 18. Come a long ways, baby. So anyway, I went from signing up we got it started in 96, maybe. And I went from signing up like 20 PI cases a month. In 90 days, I was signing up 120. Now, you can't do that now, okay? The market's too damn saturated. But back then, you could have a bad commercial and you would still get business. I'm telling you, it was just nobody. I was like the number two spender at that time spending. And Raleigh was like the 25th largest TV market. I was number two in the market. I'm spending like $40,000 a month. But here's the mistake I made. You know, you ever heard, be careful what you wish for? I couldn't handle it.
Absolutely.
I could not handle it. And plus, I didn't put back money for the hire people and equipment and all that stuff. So after about 90 days, I had to cut it off. The TV and regroup. And thank God I met this woman named Cheryl Leong, and she just passed away about probably in the last 30 days. She was a genius when it came to management and processes and procedures. And she got me organized. There's no doubt about it. I don't think I'd ever done it myself. She was a savior. She got us whipped in the deal. I started back on TV with about half as much money, saving back another. Instead of spending 40, I spent 20. But I was saving the other 20 because I had to hire people and all this. And so we just kept doing it. I kept pouring everything I made back into it other than I took out enough to pay my bills and just live a, you know, used car to do. I didn't, even when I was making, you know. But what got... You know, it takes time for these cases mature, and so I was running out of money, and I was down like 90 days behind on all my bills. And I looked at Cheryl. I said, if something don't turn by June, and this was like in April, I said, I'm gonna have to fold up. Well, June, we had our first $100,000 month of 97. And from then on, it's history, man. I mean, we just kept rolling. And then in about 5 years, I had it up to about $5 million. And I had like 13 lawyers and 47 staff. I had moved my office up to Raleigh because I had a problem keeping lawyers in a small town. You know, I'd get them in there, I'd train them, and about a year or two, they were going to one of the big cities because there was no social life for young lawyers. I mean, we were a dry county. They want no bars. They want nothing to do. I had a movie theater. That was it. And so they would go to Raleigh and Charlotte, and, you know, you can't blame them. And I called up John, and he said, hey, if you're going to be a big-time lawyer, you're going to be in a big-time city. He said, you need to move to Raleigh. You need to move your headquarters to Raleigh. So I did. I moved my headquarters to Raleigh, and I didn't have any trouble keeping lawyers after that. If a lawyer left, it's because I fired him. I treated him very well, and we just took it on up. And then I had a partner that came in 2008. We split up in 1998, we split in 2005. And that was not as nice a split up as the first one. It got very contentious. But anyway, I got to thinking about it. And anyway, I don't know. It was just keep growing. And I kind of like to grow things, but I get bored easily. I'm an entrepreneur. You know, I've always had four or five companies going on. So I had a new partner, and I said, you know, I think I want to sell out. And he said, okay. He said, well, give me an offer. So I had it, and we set it up where over a three-year period, I would gradually come out. I'd backed off to like 4 days a week, 3 days a week, 2 days a week, I'm gone. And then and I financed it for him, and he did very well with it, Ben Cochran. And I financed the whole deal because I trusted him, and he never missed a payment. He always paid me early. And then I got down to Myrtle Beach, and everybody was calling me saying, hey, Ken, how'd you grow so fast? How you do this? How you do that? Mom, I said, you need to start charging people for this, Ken. They're worrying you to death. You know, and so I did. I started charging it, and I started a mastermind, and I was speaking, and I was holding events, and then I said, I was at an event somewhere, and some lawyer said, I was telling my story. He said, well, I don't have a credit. I can't go borrow $500,000 like you do. I said, well, how much can you afford? He said, about $6,000 a month. So I thought about it, and I told him what I would do, and so, but then I got thinking about it. I said, I wonder if I could build a big firm with start with $6,000 a month as a test. Cause I like challenges, you know? And so I didn't have bar license. And so I had moved to Myrtle Beach, retire, play golf. And I got real bored doing that too. So I started a new firm called Carolina Disability Lawyers. I hired a lawyer from Raleigh that was really good. And I said, limit myself to $6,000 budget. And in 2 years, I had like 700-800 cases. And I proved what I wanted to prove, and I sold it. So next time somebody – and so nobody's ever asked me that again. But the deal was I could say, well, you know, I did borrow $500,000, but I also built one with like $72,000 a year. You know what I'm saying? It can be done. I don't – that number's probably not right today because that was in 2013 maybe. And so I just been doing the masterminds, consulting work, I just love talking this stuff. I love helping other lawyers. I didn't have anybody to help me when I was doing this. I wasted so much money, Sasha. You would not believe the money I blew. But I would try new things, and half the time it worked, and half the time it didn't work. And when it worked, man, I'd pour gasoline on the fire, and you know, and then somebody would be copying me, and then I'd be on to something else. So I was always trying to stay ahead of everybody. And I just didn't have anything like this. And I had been in a mastermind with Jay Abraham. I mean, I paid $50,000. That's been 10 years ago. $50,000 a year, about $35,000 with doing Dan Kennedy. And I said, they really do help you because it's the thing about masterminds is you get like-minded people. Your family don't understand it. Nobody else wants to hear your stresses and all that shit. So you know, I just believe it. I've been it since 2001, I've either been in or been facilitating a mastermind every year. And I mean, I'm still in one right now. And it's other people that do what I do, except they do it with different niches. They do it with dentists. They do it with music, musician. What is it? Places where they teach you how to play it, music deals. And so, you know, I just really believe it. I mean, I've helped a lot of lawyers, and I enjoy it. And everything I do is a money-back guarantee because I want them to be happy. I want them that's something Dan Kennedy said. He said, anybody asks for the money back, just give it to them. He said, it's not worth the fight. And I think he's right. So I just, events I put on, first day you come, if you don't like it, I give you money back. The masterminds, you go to the first meet, you don't like it, I give you money back. 15 years, nobody's asked for the money back, neither one of those. Then I got a gold membership, and some people do ask for the money back. It's like $300 or $400 a month, but they just kind of go in it, steal everything I got, and then leave, you know, and that's okay. I'm fine with it. If I help them, I help them. You know, spread the karma. You know, I'm good with it. I just think everything that goes around comes around, so I'm good with it all. You know, if they can live with it, I can live without it. I'm from the old school, Sasha. I just the way I believe in it. So that's a long-winded version of my story. Yeah, you know, and now I just enjoy what I'm doing. I could have made a lot more money practicing law. It's more of a lifestyle business for me. You know, I work, you know, 25, 30 hours a week. I get to spend time with my family, do stuff. Like I'm in Key West right now, you know. And, yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't have no 200-foot yacht or no Boeing 737 airplane, but I'm happy. And that's what life's about. You know, my definition of success is doing what you want to do with whom you want to do it with when you want to do it. And when I first started practicing, that was all about the money. I ain't going to lie. But when I got over that and just said, just treat people the way you want to be treated and do that, and the money will come, and it did. I mean, really, it did. I mean, so that's kind of the way I live my life now. And like I said, I'll see these lawyers that, you know, or just, I've watched lawyers. I got one like from Seattle. He started 8 years ago, 10 years ago, doing $300,000 a year. He's doing over 10 million. And I'm saying, you know, I'm happy for him, you know. We had a lot of success stories. Now they work and they do the work. And the masterminds, like you said at the beginning, not only teach you learn from others' mistakes, but you learn from other successes, and that's good both ways. Because you can save money, you can do it so much faster when you don't have to test it. Like I used to have to test it, you know. And I said failures, but they're not failures; they're learning experiences. I mean, you know, some of them just more costly than others. I don't know.
And so much life wisdom in your long story, as you said. It's a fascinating story. I think the part that caught my attention the most was about when you started that second law firm with a budget of $6,000 without having $500,000 in the bank that you borrowed, which is a fascinating story in its own. I think a lot of law firm owners are so sheepish when it comes to investing and to growing their law firms. You clearly were not. You borrowed $500,000, and this is 30 plus years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Today, you would be hard pressed to find a law firm owner who is willing to bet on themselves that much. I think most lawyers don't blink an eye when they bet on themselves when they go to law school and borrow $160,000, $200,000, $240,000. But then when it comes to investing into themselves post law firm, forget it. For most, not all. You clearly are a stark example where you believed in yourself and bet big on yourself and had a massive payoff. But the part where you went in with the second law firm with $6,000 a month budget, that story is absolutely fascinating. It almost sounds like story of Tom Brady when he went from New England Patriots, where everybody thought that his recipe was of success was, well, Bill Belichick was there. Gronkowski was there. Everybody else was there. And he was so successful because the team. Well, in his 40s, I think he was 41 or 42 when he went to the Buccaneers. Right. He was like, well, I'm going to take a mediocre team. and see what happens. Yeah, what happens is that when you have a winning character, they're going to win time and time again. The winning character. So that's what you are, sir. You are a winning character, and you proved it time and time and again. Loved your story. I usually interrupt people and ask them a lot of questions. Here I was sitting, afraid to breathe too loud, just listening to you. Terrific story. Loved it.
Appreciate it.
So with all this experience of your own, and I think in your article that goes back quite a few years, how you made your first million, you said that you, many people refer to you as the millionaire maker, and you said that you have probably made at least 100 or so millionaire law firm owners. I think that people who listen, who really tuned into what you were saying in your story, I think that they got terrific insights from what you were saying. But for others, if you don't mind, just share, what are the big three takeaways from this illustrious careers that spans over four decades now? What are the main three things that are required to build a great legal business and in turn enjoy a great life?
Yeah. So there's four things. I'm going to preface it by saying this. You got to have focus and discipline. What I mean by that is you can have the best ideas in the world, but if you don't follow through with them and execute, they're just pipe dreams. And that's kind of, I never thought I was the sharpest pencil in this room, but I was always had the most grit. What I'm talking about, there's a book out there called Grit. You should read it. Because in that book, it talks about, they did studies. This ain't just somebody thinking up something. They did studies, you know, empirical studies, and that the people, you know, from school, and the ones that had grit, not the smartest ones, made the most money or the most successful. It's the ones that had the grit, the determination, the perseverance. And that's the way I've always been. I don't never give up. My deal is if somebody says, well, there's a roadblock up there, well, I'm thinking about how can I go under it, over it, or around it. You know what I'm saying? I'm not thinking about, well, I'm just going to throw my hands up and say, well, I can't do it. No, it takes a lot more. But to really have any successful business, you got to have a good people. And I've seen this. One of my mentors told me you can never build a great business on the back of just average team members or C players. You got to have a lot of A players and some B players, because you can't have all A players. They're just not out there. And an A player is somebody who is, and there's a book called, like I said, I'm a ferocious reader. This guy named Lencioni, he wrote like the five dysfunctions of a team. And he also wrote about A players and how to hire them and all that. But he says A players are those that are humble but very smart, and that they're hungry, but not just for money. They're hungry to grow professionally and personally, and they're smart with people. What I mean is they can talk to people without pissing them off. They know how to communicate with other people so they can get their point across. So that's, you know, like humble but hungry, but, you know. And then I think the big deal, so that's the people. And then you got to have good strategy. And what I mean by that is, like, a lot of people in marketing, especially lawyers, and it's not their fault. Nobody teaches this stuff in law school. I had to learn it, you know, after law school. But just throwing money at something is not smart. You need to think about, you know, what is your purpose of this marketing that you're doing? I mean, are you trying to just create brand awareness? Or are you trying to get, is it going to be more direct response? And I know the ultimate deal is you want more cases, right? But there's, at Pilma, we have a meeting every month. We go through KPIs, marketing KPIs, and I'm looking at our social media. And I don't care as much about likes. I care more about shares, you know, and comments, because that's engagement, right? My podcast, I look at the downloads, you know, my website, and I know that's what you do, but I'm looking at my bounce rate. I'm looking at my domain authority. I'm looking at my load up speed. That's part of KPIs we look at every time, because is it easy to navigate? You know, have you got the right call to action? Have you differentiated yourself? You know, most lawyers just get there and say, we care, we're tough, we fight. Well, you got to answer this question. When somebody calls you, they're thinking, Why do I need a lawyer? And if I do, why should I hire you over everybody else that's out there? What is your differentiator? Now, when my firm, my differentiator was I had a 30-day client service satisfaction guarantee where people, if they didn't like the way we were treating them in their case, they could come get it, no fees, no costs. And that was a, kind of like a risk reversal, but I've coached some other lawyers who've been to defense work. We've got one right now in Wilmington, North Carolina. They come up with a slogan, we got their playbook. Well, that sets them apart. They know the secrets of the insurance company. You know, domestic lawyers, they might just do only men or only women or whatever. But the deal is, you got to have something that sets you apart that they can say, okay, this is why I should hire this firm. And then you got to have your brand. Everything should look the same. Your logos, everything on everything you do, so that you're building that brand awareness over a period of time. You know, it's hard to do like Pepsi and Coca-Cola. So I've always tried to do branding with direct response, to be honest with you, because I just didn't have a big enough. Even though I spent $2 million a year, that's still not enough to get the brand. I mean, you know, not just the brand awareness. I mean, you know, they spend billions. So anyway, you got to have a good, effective marketing strategy, and you got to measure it. You cannot manage what you cannot measure, okay? And then you got to have, in my opinion, execution, and that's what I talked about. I'm a certified scaling up coach. Vern Harnish taught me a lot of, and there's a book called Scaling Up in the Rockefeller Habits. It's a lot of people are on this EOS deal now with Wickman, but Wickman just took everything. Vern Harnish, he stole it and just put it into a cookie cutter. But Vern's a real true. He's like the main guy. He's smart, and you know, what I've learned about it is that, you know, what now I do quarterly planning meetings, and we pick two or three projects and we work on it, and we don't just say, if somebody's got to own it. If more than one person owns it, then, you know, everybody's pointing the finger the other way. Somebody's got to own it, right? Yeah. And then, you know, and we do weekly check-ins to see where we're at on the checklist, and we got 12 weeks to get it done. So once we went to that, we accomplished like 3 to 5 times more every year of stuff that we were trying to get done. I call them quarterly strategy meetings, you know, and we come up with that. And then the last thing is you got to have cash flow. What is it? Revenue is for show. Profits, you know, to survive. But when it comes down to it, when you run out of cash, game over. And if you look at the most reasons most businesses fail in the first 5 years, it's with lack of capitalization. So, you know, and I mean, I like to have been a victim of that, right? I mean, when I first started, I mean, I was put all my money in my market, and I didn't really have enough capital to support all the incoming cases. So I was undercapitalized. I mean, I almost went bankrupt. I mean, if I would start over, I tell people now, get your infrastructure set up, your processes, your procedures when you're small. And if you're going to, like, I went up, this guy settled a case and had a $2 million fee. He said, I want you to come up and teach me. So I went around and looked at it, did a two or three day consult. And I said, you got to get this infrastructure. You got no process. Everybody's doing everything kind of. One lawyer's doing it this way, another lawyer's doing it this way. You got no KPIs, nothing. He said, well, I'll worry about that. You just tell me how to get these cases in the door. And I said, I'm not going to do it. I said, I'll give you a refund. I said, but you will fail. I don't want you to. I said, you will fail and you will blame me. So I'll just give you a refund and I'll see you next time. And I think I got his attention with that. And he finally would listen to me, and he did. And he was very successful. But that's my learning from my mistakes, you know, because I mean, I made the mistake of not doing that. So they say, well, we don't have enough time, but we'll wait till you get real busy. Then you won't have time. So I think that's very important. You know what I'm saying? And so there's a lot of things, but I'd say the main thing, the underlying deal is focus and discipline. That's where I see people, you know, they come to my conference, and I mean, you know, they tell me it's like drinking from a fire hose. And they'll have 20 or 30 things they're going to do when they get back home. And I tell them at the end of it, I said, if you go back trying to do all this stuff, you're not going to do anything. You're going to get quagmire and life's going to get in the way. I said, pick three things, prioritize those three things. When you knock one off, you know, then add another one, but then put number two up to number one and number three up to number two and add another one, but never have more than three things you're trying to work on at one time, because it just, you get nothing done. You know, I mean, it's, you know, this stuff, multitasking is a farce. You know, there've been studies done on that too. People say I can multitask. They really can't. You know, I mean, I like to block my time and get quiet time. I can get more work in 2 hours. I do a lot of my work between 5 o'clock and 7 o'clock in the morning when nobody's around the house moving around. You know, it's just quiet. I can think.
Amen.
Fresh. I'm fresh. As you get older as I am, you know, you run out of juice. You know, all these wrinkles on my head, I don't know if they can see this, if it's just going to be sound, but that's because of working late nights and, you know, worrying. And you don't have to do it. I mean, I figured it out. But, you know, and that's the way I run Pilma. And Pilma's a multi-million-dollar business now, believe it or not. I couldn't believe it when I started out. It was just more like a hobby. But, you know, you never know, right? I, like I said, I like to build stuff, so.
Let me sum up those five core things you got to have to build a successful law firm and live a successful life. Number one, wholeheartedly agree, grit. If you ain't got it, nothing else is going to help you.
That's right.
Nobody's going to do that work for you. No one's going to lead for you. No one's going to build for you. You got to start off with that. Number two, good people, A players. If you don't have A players, C players are going to kill your grid. They're just going to drag you down.
Absolutely.
Number three, strategy. Without sound strategy, things are going to be hard. You will be wasteful. You will be wasting a lot more than you will be investing. Number four, execute and measure. Can't just execute. Got to measure the outputs of what you do. And number five, learn from Mr. Hardison. Watch your cash flow.
Yeah.
It is easy to feel really good about growing pipeline while running out of cash.
You could grow yourself broke. There's a book.
Yeah.
I think a guy named Crabtree wrote, and he talks about this banker, and it wasn't even a law firm. It was a different kind of business. And the guy said, well, I'm growing. The banker laid out their thing. He said, yeah, you grow yourself into bankruptcy. You know, you got to back up, redo, you know.
Yeah. Most people don't really understand how that happens. But if you go to any MBA program, which lawyers don't, but if you go to any MBA program, they will teach you how mid-sized businesses go into bankruptcy despite really rapid or because of really rapid growth. They run out of cash, and then nobody wants to lend them. And that's just it. That's the end of the road. So can definitely help. If you practice, whoever is listening or watching this, if you practice personal injury, even if you don't practice personal injury, but you operate your own law firm and you want to grow faster, check out Pilma, P-I-L-M-M-A. Personal injury, right? It's personal injury.
Right.
Marketing and Management Association.
Association.
Lots of wisdom there. Ken, thank you so much. It's been
thank
one
you.
Of the most enjoyable interviews I've ever conducted here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, man. I love talking this stuff. You know, you can tell I got a passion for it.
I can tell.
I don't want people to make the same mistakes I made. And I overcame them, but you know why? Because I got grit. Most people would have given up. You know, no why. I mean, I know they would have.
Yeah, I'll wrap up by remembering the quote from the late, great Steve Jobs. And he said, if you own your own business, your own law firm, you got to love what you do.
Yeah.
Got to love what you do. Otherwise, you're just going to quit because things will inevitably get hard. And if for those people who have not read Steve Jobs' biography, that man has gone through very serious hardships.
Yeah.
Despite all that success. Very serious hardships. And the reason why he kept on plugging along, loved what he did. What he did.
You know, I told all my
thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. Much appreciated. Go ahead.
Thank you. No, I'll say one thing, and I'll end with that.
What's the last?
I told all my children, I said, find something that you really got a passion for and love, and I'll show you how to make money at. I said, but the deal is, if you don't love what you're doing, if you don't get up at work, get up and look forward to going to work every day, you'll never be successful in it. You'll be miserable. Now, you might be rich, but I've seen a lot of rich, miserable people. So you got to love what you're doing. I'll hush with that. I told you I like to talk about this stuff. I'll be quiet.
Thank you so much, Ken. Much appreciated.
Thanks for listening to the Grow Law Firm podcast. If you liked the ideas shared in this episode, help a fellow lawyer out by sharing a link to the episode. This episode is powered by the team of experts in client attraction, growlawfirm.com. Do you want a complimentary growth plan for your law firm? Request it at growlawfirm.com/blueprint.